Let's return to This Week in America. Here's your host, Rick Bratton.
Welcome back, everybody. Coast to coast, This Week in America. Healthcare is changing rapidly, changing especially for older adults. Dr. Carrie Engelbreit is an expert in the field of healthy aging and wellness of life. Dr. Engelbreit is the lead faculty at Mid-State Technical College in Wisconsin Rapids, Wisconsin. Began her extensive career in 1997 when she became a nursing assistant, moving on to become a registered nurse in long-term care. She then began working in public health, focusing on children with special health care needs, childhood lead poisoning prevention, and prenatal care. In 2006, Dr. Carrie began her teaching career as an adjunct faculty in the nursing and nursing assistant programs at MSTC. In 2007, she became the lead nursing assistant instructor and program director, and now lead faculty in the gerontology program and health and wellness promotion program at MSTC. She's the author of CNA Nursing Assistant Certification and Workbook. Dr. Carrie Engelbreit, our guest on today's This Week in America. Dr. Engelbreit, welcome to the program. It's great to have you with us.
Thanks, Rick. Thanks for having me.
There are so many important topics to talk about, and I started off by mentioning some of the changes. You've been involved in healthcare since 1997. Talk about some of the changes that you've seen in your 20-year career.
Oh, they've been plenty, that's for sure. I would have to say probably the most prominent, besides the fiscal considerations, which that would probably take an hour show in and of itself.
I'm sure,
yes. Prominent is the savviness of the healthcare consumer. It's really not just, I'm a patient, you're a consumer of healthcare services, and we have a lot of information at our fingertips all the time. Some of that is really good information, and some of that is really not so good information. So the role of the healthcare provider at every level really has evolved to meet that extended educational need of the patient or the client. So really taking time to understand where the client is coming from, understanding what their knowledge base is, and then working from that to get them to the point where they need to be.
A key part of that is health literacy. Talk a little bit about that and what we really need to know to be effective consumers. It used to be if you went in and asked a question, some doctors would look at you like, excuse me, I'm the one talking here, you will listen. And some people go in now and actually take notes and are able to go back and go through those later. Talk about health literacy and how important that is that we really understand the language we're talking when we're talking with a medical professional.
Absolutely. It is just so important. And if you don't understand the language of healthcare, there's going to be missed opportunities and probably some medical or some medication errors that happen because of that. And health literacy is much more than just plain literacy. We can see people that have their PhD and have poor health literacy rates. So health literacy really means that a person has the ability to obtain and process and understand health information and the services that are needed so that they can make really good choices about their own unique health care needs. So that can encompass things like being able to understand the care provider during the visit. So just like what you were talking about, if you go in and you're asking questions, you need to be able to understand what that health care provider is telling you. But you also need to be able to read a prescription label, navigate those different health care resources that perhaps the provider is offering you, navigate all of the different appointments. So if you have specialty care providers, you have to understand what a medical home is, and then you have to also understand how those specialty areas connect with that medical home. You also need to be able to read and understand discharge instructions if you're coming out of the hospital. And probably the most important thing right now, because people are living longer and not necessarily living healthier, is managing multiple instructions for multiple diseases from multiple providers. And that can be really tough.
Our guest on the program, Dr. Carrie Engelbreit, we're talking about healthy aging and wellness of life. You touched on something before. There is so much information out there with the internet. How do we handle that? You can look at something and go, wow, I think I'm terminal, and look at another story and go, I could live to be 95. How do we go through that and sort of sort out what's relevant and what isn't?
It is quite difficult. Most people are getting their information from the internet. So making sure that you are going to credible and reliable resources on the internet, there's some really good things. There's, you know, the World Health Organization, the CDC, Mayo Clinic, websites like that that have really good information that is evidence-based and data-driven. if you go onto a website and they're trying to sell you something, you probably don't want to be on that website for your own healthcare information. Another thing is when you go into your healthcare provider, not being afraid to ask those questions. Sometimes people are embarrassed of the questions they have. You know, they might feel like they should know more about their condition than what they actually do know, and that can be stressful. One other really important consideration that older adults, and I think anyone in general, can embrace is the use of an advocate. So when you go into your healthcare provider, especially if it is for a complex need, having somebody go in with you, preferably that knows the language of healthcare, but if they don't, if you don't have anybody like that, just somebody else, a support person there. Because when you have information delivered to you that might not be really pleasant information, your mind starts racing, you can get upset, you can get anxious, and you don't really hear the provider, and you don't really think of really good questions to ask the provider. So having that advocate in the room with you is really important. They can either take a passive role, meaning they could just sit there and take notes, and so that after the visit is over, you can go back and review those notes together, or that person could take a more active role and help ask questions that you might not be thinking of when you're in front of that healthcare provider.
You mentioned something very interesting. We're living longer, but that doesn't necessarily talk about the quality of the health that we're in. What are some of the determinants of good health?
There are quite a few. You're right. We are living longer, but not necessarily healthier. We have extended that chronological age, but because of that, we're seeing more chronic illness crop up and multiple chronic illnesses in individuals crop up. And we know that by 2030, about 20% of our population is going to be that older adult population, and a good segment of that population has at least one chronic disease or multiple chronic diseases. So there's these different determinants of health, and we can kind of break them up into genetic and environmental and social. So genetic determinants of health are basically, you know, just our genes, what we're born with, those characteristics that we inherited from our parents and our grandparents and so on. But there's new research emerging in terms of epigenetics, and basically epigenetic changes are those that occur based on these previous familial experiences, these life experiences, and sometimes some lifestyle choices. So it could be either my lifestyle choices or my life experiences or that of my parents or my grandparents. And basically it's these little chemical markers that are either activated or inactivated in our gene sequence. And that means that gene is going to be expressed differently. So we may see some illness based on those epigenetic changes. So that's just a new emerging field of research to keep our eye on. You know, most people think, well, it's just in my genes, and I'm going to give up because, you know, my dad had high blood pressure.
Well, exactly,
and my grandpa
yes.
had high blood pressure, so I'm just not even going to deal with that. I just know that I'm going to get high blood pressure. Well, that's not necessarily true. There are a lot of lifestyle choices that you can make to combat that genetic predisposition.
So it's not inevitable.
Oh, sorry.
It's not inevitable.
No, it is not
because
inevitable.
Of genetics. Interesting.
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely. We are in charge. You know, some things we can't change, but we should not take this fatalistic attitude that, well, I'm just going to throw my arms up because I know I'm going to die when I'm 50, just like my dad and my grandpa did. That's a mistake. We need to take charge of our lifestyle choices and work with our healthcare providers to extend that life or the quality of life.
What about social aspects?
Sorry, go ahead.
What about social aspects?
Right. So those social determinants of health are, I think, personally, what play the largest role in our health outcomes. And the social determinants of health, I like to explain to people as it can really boil down to the term access to. So what do you as an individual or a community or a society have access to? If you have access to a safe neighborhood, quality schools, walkable green spaces, living jobs, clean drinking water, good healthy foods, things like that, then you're more likely to age and age well. So living longer and aging well. It's called the social gradient of health. So if you have access to those things that I had listed off, you're more than likely going to have better health outcomes than someone that does not have access to those items. So You know, if you are living in poverty, if you have high levels of stress, if you're discriminated against, if you're socially excluded from the population, you more than likely are going to have poorer health outcomes. So if you think about, you know, the ramifications of all of those different things that I just listed off, they can be so impactful to, again, not just the individual, but the community and society as a whole.
You're listening to This Week in America. Our guest on the program, Dr. Carrie Engelbreit, we're talking about healthy aging and wellness of life. Dr. Engelbreit is the author of CNA, Nursing Assistant Certification and Workbook. Information on that available at August Learning Solutions. You can get information on Dr. Engelbreit by going to our website, thisweekinamerica.us. A term that's fairly new, at least to me, heard in the last couple of years is age in place. Exactly what does that mean?
It really means exactly what it says. Most older adults want to age where they are living at right now. So most older adults do not aspire to transition to a nursing home or an assisted living facility. So this aging in place is really important because it's what people want, first and foremost. People want to stay in their own home. Other great byproducts of that is that it keeps people happy and healthy. It keeps people living longer, and it's less expensive. So it's a win for everybody. And I think there's a common misconception that most older adults go to a nursing home, and that's not true. That's false. Only about 5% of the population actually lives in a long-term care agency.
Now, that is an interesting statistic. Yeah, we're led to believe, and maybe it's because commercials we see all the time, we're going to end up in a nursing home, so we better start planning for it now.
Right. And with our aging population and the baby boomers coming to that 65 and older age bracket, I think you're going to see a large explosion of home-based services because most people do want to age in place. So think about those durable medical equipment companies, personal care services, home health nursing services, all of those support systems that we can put in place to help that older adult age in place.
That's an interesting area to discuss. We hear about the silver tsunami, and you're talking about caregiving, and obviously we're going to need more caregivers. Are we prepared for that?
Right now, no. We have about 600,000 nursing assistants that support about 1.4 million people in nursing homes. So that's not a lot. We know that most often the home health sector probably will grow at a faster rate than the assisted living or nursing home sector. However, with the sheer amount of people that we know are aging into that 65-plus age category, we are going to need more nursing assistants in both assisted living, nursing home, and in those home health services.
How do we go about watching? And let's say our parents, mom and dad, physically they seem fine. We see them maybe a couple of times a month. What should we be watching for mentally to make sure that they're okay? And we don't need to watch out for them. I keep reading more and more stories about financial scams perpetrated against the elderly.
Right. Those are definitely a concern, the financial scams. But in terms of general health, what you want to look for are the little indicators like, is the house not kept as clean as it always was? Or if they have pets, are there pet messes on the floor? Is there food in the refrigerator? Are they seeming to eat nutritious meals? Are they gaining weight? Are they losing weight? Things like that. Now, those indicators do not necessarily mean that they need to go into a facility for facility-based care. It could be something as simple as they just need some in-home services such as light housekeeping or meal prep or just some basic socialization. Social isolation is a huge problem in the older adult population. So if, you know, think about it, if you're all alone, you don't really feel like cooking a big meal or eating a big meal. So you might be losing weight because of that socialization piece. So it could be something as simple as getting some in-home services, or you could take it a step up, and if you notice that maybe hygiene isn't as good as it used to be, getting some in-home caregiving like nursing assistant or personal care work in the home. But then you can kind of see some other red flags that maybe there's some more help that the older adult might need. And that could be frequent trips to the emergency room or to the healthcare provider, chronic diseases that aren't being managed, and a lot of falls or injuries from falls. Falls are actually one of the number one killer of older adults, and it's not because of the fall itself. It's because of the immobility that results from the fall. So keeping older adults strong and healthy, physically active, doing balance training and strength training and fall prevention training is really important when they're in their home and want to age in place.
How about physical activity? Obviously, many are not going to participate in a marathon, but just doing something simple. What role does that play?
It plays a huge role. Movement is life. So the World Health Organization recommends 150 minutes of aerobic physical activity throughout the week. And I know that sounds like a lot of physical activity, and most people are like, I don't think I can fit in an extra, 30 minutes, let alone 150 minutes. But kind of sneaking in those minutes are a really easy way to get to that goal. So for the older adult, that might mean taking a trip around the block several times a day. You go for a couple of 15-minute brisk walks outside. That would get you to that 150 minutes. It could mean going down to the local senior center and joining a class. You could join a dance class or any other kind of aerobic fitness class or your local YMCA. So there are really easy ways to get to that 150 minutes. Most people think about physical activity and just think about the cardio piece of it, but they don't think about the balance training and the muscle strengthening activities. Balance training should be 3 or more days a week, especially for that older adult, and that could be a Tai Chi or a Qigong class at your local YMCA or Aging and Disability Resource Center, or it could be just doing exercises at home, holding on to a chair and lifting up one leg, letting go of the chair. So, real basic exercises that you can either do with a group for socialization or that you can do at home. And then the same thing with those muscle strengthening activities. Maybe you want to go to a gym and participate in a group with other older adults, but maybe that's really intimidating. So just getting some bands that you can use at home, or even a simple intervention like taking a half-gallon milk carton and filling it up with sand or dried beans and lifting that. So it could be really cheap, inexpensive, and easy interventions to do, all the way up to getting a gym membership and joining a group.
Great information, and as I was afraid of, time went by way too quickly. We're talking about healthy aging and wellness of life. Dr. Carrie Engelbreit, our guest on the program. A lot of great information there. Doctor, thank you so much for being with us on the program. Hopefully we can do it again. So much more to talk about. Thank you for being with us on the show today.
Thanks so much, Rick. I appreciate it.
Dr. Carrie Engelbreit, our guest on the program, the author of CNA, Nursing Assistant Certification and Workbook. Information, of course, available at our website, thisweekinamerica.us. And we're back after these messages.
You're listening to This Week in America with Rick Bratton. More after this.